Hello, and welcome to Robbinsdale Revisited. In this episode, we step into the voice of Edith Robbins Daniel, the eldest daughter of Andrew B. Robbins, founder of Robbinsdale, and as you're about to hear, a woman with plenty to say. In 1944, in her 70s, Edith sat down and summed up her life on a single page, in not a dry, list-of-facts kind of way, but with humor, wit, and just enough sparkle to make you wish you could have met her. Through her words, we follow her family's journey from early pioneer roots to the building of a community, complete with skating hand-in-hand on the Mississippi River. As she puts it, her parents paid more attention to each other than to the minister in church. It's these moments that bring her story to life, reminding us that history isn't just dates and places. It's people, personalities, and little details they choose to remember. Don't let the light tone fool you. Edith's life was anything but small. She was a teacher, a principal, a writer whose children's songs were heard across the country, and a tireless civic leader. She organized wartime relief efforts. She ran her father's business after his death, and spent decades shaping her community in ways that still echo today. And somehow, in the middle of all that, she still found time to joke about her greatest academic achievement: handholding. This is Edith in her own words, warm, sharp, and just a little bit mischievous. And it's a reminder that even a single page of history can tell a remarkable story. Join me and Crystal Boyd as we explore the life of Edith Robbins Daniel. This brief personal history was written in 1944 by Edith, one of the five Robbins daughters. She describes her family, life, and career over many years of public service.
She says, "Father was of distinguished revolutionary ancestry from Maine. Andrew B. Robbins was a very small boy when his father brought his family west and settled in Anoka in 1853. Mother's people were early settlers in New York and Ohio. They were prominent as lawyers, physicians, and educators, and among them were Supreme Court judges in Ohio and New York. At the outbreak of the Civil War, Mother, Adelaide Walker, was a student at Baldwin. She left the university to go with her mother and sister and her stepfather to serve during the war in Tripler General Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. At the close of the Civil War, she came with her family to Old St. Anthony. Father also came to St. Anthony at the close of his service with the 8th Regiment Minnesota Volunteers. Mother and her sister Helen Walker were teachers in the Minneapolis schools. And soon, the handsome young station agent Andrew and the beautiful young schoolteacher Adelaide began to skate hand in hand on the Mississippi River and to look at each other more than at the minister during church. After their marriage, they lived in St. Anthony, which later became Minneapolis, and pioneered the city of Wilmer, Minnesota. They built their permanent home on a lovely hill on the lake in the village that Father had platted here in Robbinsdale. His family, including five young daughters, enjoyed the blessings of a perfect home with space indoors and out for gracious living. He and Mother were tireless and lifelong planters of trees and gardens. Thousands of splendid trees and many hardy gardens are their worthy monuments. All the daughters became university graduates, with a few master's degrees sprinkled in. I was one of these graduates. I taught Latin, mathematics, and English in Minneapolis high schools, and served as grade school principal and as high school principal in other places until my marriage in 1907. I have had the wonderful experience of writing children's songs and am still doing this work. These songs were published in the Music Education series of Gin and Company. They are very widely used, and hearing children sing them in different parts of the country has brought me great joy. And I am still writing material for greeting cards. I have also had the fun of writing the children's corner for newspapers. I am completing 24 years of service as district clerk of a very large school district. And you know, of course, that a person who serves too long as a school board member is never the same again. I have had the honor and pleasure of serving on charter commissions, on appraisal boards, and many others. In World War I, while my sister Amy was serving in France, I had given to me a splendid opportunity for service. I directed the makings of many hundreds of garments to send to the war sufferers in France and other countries. I had splendid groups of women working almost every day for many months. My latest venture as a teacher was working in the adult education department. In this work, I wrote also materials for adult beginners in English. In 1935 and 1936, I enjoyed the work we did at the university. I still like to listen in around the old place. At times in the past, I have been a member of the College Women's Club, Business Women's Club, the Daughters of the American Revolution, the Parent Teacher Association, Women's Relief Corps, Pi Beta Phi, and various study groups and service clubs. I am an honorary member of the Tourist Club, and I am a mom. I have one daughter, Helen Mary. Her faith, courage, and efficiency are a joy to me. We are members of the Robbinsdale Congregational Church. At our commencement, I won special distinction in a subject in which I had had no training or experience and for which I had no credits. The subject of hand-holding. I held the hand of nearly every man in the class. But please don't remind anyone that I was the gypsy fortune teller.
I feel like I'm in the room with Edith Robbins Daniel. She's in her 70s when she's writing this, but she sums up her life in a page.
It's incredible. I love the things that she pulls out, especially that story about how her parents met and skating on the Mississippi River. That's so beautiful.
All this time looking at each other in church. And she only mentions that her parents were pioneers in Willmar. We know that that story is a little more involved because they leave St. Anthony for Willmar. They have a son there, Harlow, and then Edith is born after that. Then they have another daughter, Helen. Within a couple years, Helen and Harlow have passed away at ages like 6 and 4. So Edith must have known them and have maybe some memory. I mean, most of us can remember something that happened when we were 5 or 6 years old. And certainly you would remember the death of 2 siblings. And while the family was there, Andrew B. Robbins, her father, I know he served as mayor of Willmar. I know that he was founded the Presbyterian Church in Willmar, helped found the bank in Willmar. He went there with the railroad looking for a job. He found a job with the Great Northern Railroad, went out to Willmar when an opportunity arose. I think he was a station agent here in St. Anthony, and then went out to Willmar to become, I think, a station agent there. But when you have millionaire relatives, the way the Robbins did, he invited Thomas Barlow Walker, the lumber baron, out to Willmar because he had some ideas about making money. What he noticed was the crops were being decimated by grasshoppers. They went and toured some of the farms in the area, and Andrew B. Robbins had this idea for the hop dozer, and that was his first actual business venture that I know of. I mean, he must have had some financial dealings, but you know, here he is as an entrepreneur, and he starts selling this thing that you can drag through the field and get all the grasshoppers out of your crops. I don't know how effective it was, but he sold some. He convinced Thomas Barlow Walker to invest in it and made some money doing that. Then they got into the elevator business and banking. And eventually, though, he comes back and they settle in Marion Park in St. Paul before coming to Robbinsdale. Edith pretty much grows up here, but I'm guessing she arrives here. She must have been in her teens by the time they get here. We know Amy was born in Thomas Barlow Walker's house. And then the rest of the children, I believe, are born in Robbinsdale. But Edith is the eldest, and she's a couple years older. Definitely the one who was in charge when her father passes away in 1910. She's the one that's left to run the business. They get that highway tea house built by 1920. And she's operating the business as a real estate. There was something called the Signal Company that was probably had to do with the railroads, some elevator company, some interests in the Red River Lumber Company. Then she was doing loans in real estate out of the Highway Tea House that her sister and her opened up. When Amy is off in World War I, serving in France, Edith is heading up all sorts of organizations here in Robbinsdale, knitting socks, they're knitting hats, gathering money for the Red Cross, and sending things over to the troops. Edith Robbins runs her father's business and doesn't really change the name. She calls it the Estate of Andrew B. Robbins or the Andrew B. Robbins Estate, and their address is 4423 Crystal Lake Avenue. And of course, that was West Broadway, right here in Robbinsdale. They ran it out at the little Jefferson Highway Tea House. And at one point, she says that Jefferson Highway was actually paved with her boots that were stuck in the mud They wrote lots of little real estate ads. A lot of times it was something simple that would appear in the papers like, don't buy so far out, or check out the estate of Andrew B. Robin. And it was probably because this land was all platted in the 1890s. There are no racial covenants on any of the lands from the estate of Andrew B. Robbins. I'm still waiting to be proven wrong on that. So now we have this little piece of advertising called The Wise Old Owl.
The Wise Old Owl. I said to the owl in the top of the tree, "Oh, why are the birds always singing to me?" The owl then replied, "But your question is queer. The answer to me is so plain and so clear. They own their own homes is the reason they sing. I'm building my home is the message they bring. For each little bird is still loving the best the plan and design of his own little nest. Hoo-hoo," said the owl, "is a person that's heard of a home that's just rented by even one bird. The birds wouldn't sing if their lives were all spent in fruitless vain struggles just paying the rent. And so in the spring, when you're hearing them sing, I'm building my home is the message they bring." Then wise blinking owl, as he blinked and he blinked, kept saying as slyly he winked and he winked, "Oh, Robbinsdale Park, so I always have heard, is the best of locations for any wise bird. For even the slowest old bird still agrees, it's Robbinsdale Park with its lakes and its trees." "Hoo-hoo," said the owl, "we'll then sell you the lots. Oh, the Robbins estate has the choicest of spots. A.B. Robbins estate, the wise birds always say, we'll plan the best homes and we'll show you the way."
Well, it's so much like her children's verses that she published later in her children's songs. Owls and insects and creatures out in nature are always the best way to sell things. Here's another little advertisement. This is from Souvenir Robbinsdale, suburban Minneapolis, which is kind of like a little history of the town, a little overview. And I am pretty sure that Edith had more to do with getting this pamphlet published than anybody else. And this is called Garden Acres at Robbinsdale Park. The lots are located from 1 to 5 blocks off the electric car line near churches and schools, with wide streets bordered with double rows of fine old trees. No cheap houses, all fine homes with well-kept grounds, and the lots that are already sold have been improved. Large lots, 50 by 150, with building restrictions. Lots in this beautiful residential district are rapidly increasing in value. So the terms are 1/4 cash balance monthly installments, discount for cash sales. Houses are for sale and for rent. The estate of Andrew B. Robbins are the people to contact. Okay, so we have a little snippet from Who's Who Among Minnesota Women, a history of women's work in Minnesota from pioneer days to date, told in biographies, memorials, and records of organizations. And this was compiled and published by Mary Dillon Foster in 1924. The first time I kind of shared this publicly, I think it may have been on the website, and I got these comments back about Edith Robbins Daniels, Robbinsdale, of colonial ancestry. And there was somebody in the comments that said, colonial ancestry, she was a descendant of oppressors. Why would you put that in there? And I'm like, well, I didn't. Mary Dillon Foster did in 1924. You know, I don't know that people had the same point of pride as they did at that time of their colonial ancestry, whether they're Mayflower descendants or Daughters of the American Revolution, all these organizations that are all built around this idea that if you were descended from the original colonists, you were somehow more special.
Yeah, and for a long time, genealogy work like that did come with some sort of implied bias or judgment that, oh, because of my background, I'm better. And I think that's not true today. We recognize it more as a historic tool to learn about the past. But at the time this was written in 1924, saying of colonial ancestry made people feel a little fancy. But that word is actually pretty accurate, right? Talking about colonial settlers. When Edith is talking about her ancestry, she's thinking about New England. But the fact that her dad could even come here in 1853 is through a series of treaties, especially the Treaty of 1851 with the Dakota people. So her family could only come here because this land had been opened up through treaties that are often seen as coercive or not totally forthright with the people on both sides. So I think that word is apt, even though we're seeing it differently today than she probably intended it when she wrote it back in 1924.
Yeah. And I can't tell how much the Robbins family actually wrapped their identity around being descended from Revolutionary War people or Mayflower people. They do apply for membership in these organizations like the Daughters of American Revolution. But I think that the biographers, and I think sometimes you paid somebody to write this little biography and appear in their little book of who's who. And I think the biographers were always asking, and that was like one thing that they wanted to emphasize. Where are you from? Where are your people from? And of course, you know, we don't have aristocracy as such in America, but maybe it was almost like trying to build that mystique that you are descended from the original people that came here from England. Although I think some of these people were Irish. So we'll just go ahead and read this little piece. Edith Robbins Daniel Robbinsdale of colonial ancestry, daughter of Andrew B. Robbins and Adelaide Walker Robbins. As college student and teacher, she began writing poems. Boston critics pronounced her the foremost writer of children's verse today. She is a graduate of the University of Minnesota, a member of Pi Beta Phi. She's traveled extensively, home and abroad, was principal of Medelia High School, taught in East and Central High Schools in Minneapolis, specialized in real estate in her father's office with her sister Amy Robbins Ware. She conducts the Andrew B. Robbins Estate and Robbinsdale Insurance and Loan Agency. During the war, Miss Daniel cut and directed the making of thousands of garments in the workrooms at T.B. Walker offices and residence of Miss Charles S. Pillsbury. They shipped these things to France, Belgium, Italy by special government permit. Ms. Daniels, in 1924, was the school director and clerk of Independent District 24, that later became District 281, and she was reelected. She spent 1922 in Boston as writer and advisor, and she graded music education songbooks. And those are used in Minneapolis and elsewhere. Her contributions appear under five pen names containing Robbins, Walker, or Barlow. Inspiration for this work she credits to her pupils, her nephew, Louis Robbins Gillette, and the collaboration of her 11-year-old daughter, Helen Mary Robbins. Ms. Daniel is a member of the DAR, Parent Teachers Club, League of Women's Voters, Business Women's Club, Tourist Club, and a member of the Thursday Musical. We have this little picture here of her and Robbins Gillette, and somewhere there's a picture of her and Helen Mary Robbins. And that was probably included in this little who's who.
And you can tell she really loves children. In both of these photographs, the kids are just beaming and she's having fun. She's holding both of them. It's really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that was her life's work, too. Just entertaining children seems to have been one of her favorite things to do. Briefly mentioned here, it says that she's a member of the League of Women's Voters. And of course, she wrote this epic poem called Suffragette Salad.
And as we go through it, you could listen for all the different reasons they think women shouldn't vote because they are varied and weak. So here we go. Suffragette Salad by Edith Robbins. My darling, cried this noble man, it surely isn't in God's plan that you, so fair, abroad should roam. We want you sheltered in your home. The woman has the time to spare while she is filled with household care for tea or bridge or matinee. She should be home election day. We simply cannot understand why the ballot should demand. No fool or child to vote has tried, and man's decree thereby defied. Our politics are so debased. If you should know, you'd be disgraced. You'd better stay at home, and then vote through your sons when they are men. We cannot have you soil your skirt in trailing through this awful dirt with which we've filled each polling place, while we've uplifted all the race. My dear, I simply would not dare to have you come and hear us swear, while man's great mind does calmly weigh each mighty question of the day. You could not properly defame each candidate's respected name. You're too excitable, my dear. You might get up and shout, I fear. In public meetings, your emotion might sometimes cause a slight commotion. If you will watch man's great conventions, you'll see they're free from all dissensions. If voting you should undertake, or try some little law to make, you might disturb the dove of peace. Man's reign of harmony might cease. I don't see how you think you can improve the perfect work of man. Just see the earth at peace and rest. It shows that laws of man are best. If at the polls with men you mix, we fear you'll learn their lowdown tricks. Your soul will be as black as ink if like a man you try to think. The vote of man 'twould only double and cause an awful lot of trouble to count the votes by women cast if this fool suffrage bill were passed. Your vote would never count, you see, for you would only follow me, or else, alas, I'd follow you. I cannot see what good 'twould do. The time and money it would take to count the extra votes you'd make are needed now to turn the tricks with which we filled our politics. If you should go and vote with men, you'd never love your home again. Your husband, poor dear suffering sinner, would go to bed without his dinner. If of this voting you should taste, you'd hang around the polls and waste the time you now rejoice to spend at home to sew and scrub and mend. Your 7 hungry children small at home alone would sob and squall. Oh, awful depths of degradation would follow your emancipation. More potent, your influence strong, like leaven righting every wrong, the ship of state would soon be wrecked without your influence indirect. I dread to think the awful harm the vote would do your grace and charm. I shudder at the change I'm sure would come should you the vote secure. The perfect courtesy you meet from men at home or on the street, that reverence men to women pay if you should vote, would fade away. No longer would your slightest word be law unto each man that heard. No longer would man rush to do each thing a woman asked him to. 'Twould be too hard, the wise men say, to manage you election day. You might tell where the money went for candidates now wisely spent. Perhaps if you sit down and wait, the best of you will educate, but generations it will take before much progress we can make. Your brains will have to analyze and see if they are quite the size and shape and substance that we know our own most massive brains to grow. If only you will watchful wait till supermen can educate, preparedness will make you ready like Brian, Woodrow, Taft, or Teddy. This most unwomanly parade our wives and mothers does degrade. Your husband's filled with apprehension at your attracting man's attention. For woman, it is not the thing to march upon the streets and sing. More modest that the woman waits for centuries while men debate. Don't on the streets with banners walk, and in the public car don't talk. Just watchful waiting by the year will do the most for you, my dear. Don't hurry us, we must go slow. 'Twill take 1,000 years or so. Meantime, your minds we will devote to this great question, woman's vote. If out of politics you keep, you'll be quite fit our homes to sweep, and pure enough man's bread to bake if in men's work no part you take. For pure food laws, why should you try? Just keep your icebox clean and dry. If you're at home, you may be sure the food you buy is clean and pure. The mother's place is in the home. The father's duty is to roam. The faster he can set the pace, the more he elevates the race. But mother finds her greatest joy right there at home with father's boy. For mother surely is the one to bring up father's little son. I love to know you sit and wait while I am at the club till late. The holiest memory I have known is that you're sewing there all alone. Then quietly crochet and tat. Your mind is fitted just for that. Contentment thus at home you'll find and greatly elevate mankind.
It's so elaborate.
She really thought out all the arguments about how it's going to debase women, how men won't know what to do. It's going to take too much time to count the women's votes. Like, it's a great poem. I think she did an awesome job.
2 carbon copies. So she had intentions for this. And what does it say up at the top there? Something about room 116. So I'm wondering if this was written while she was teaching or when she was a student. We don't have a date on it. And I'm just going to try one more reading. This is from A History of Minneapolis, Gateway to the Northwest by S.J. Clark Publishing. And this one's from 1923, so just a year earlier from the other one. It's a little longer, but it gives us a little more to work with. The will of Andrew B. Robbins made his wife and his daughter Edith Robbins executors of his estate. This action was in recognition of the longtime cooperation of his life partner and the active participation for many years in his real estate and allied interests of his eldest daughter, Edith Robbins, whose work in carrying forward the plans for developing the beautiful suburb which bears her father's name, along lines he approved, has fully justified his faith. She is helping the children of her father's customers of the early 90s to build substantial homes in the shade of his trees, which she has cared for and guarded through all the intervening years. Edith Robbins' preparatory schooling was received at McAllister and Carleton Colleges, while her academic and graduate work was carried on at the University of Minnesota, where she took her Bachelor's of Science degree in 1894, completing the work for a Master's of Arts in 1895 and 1896. She also became a pianist of marked ability under the tutelage of Carl von Lachmann, subsequently director of the Scherwenka Conservatory of Music in New York City. She has been an active worker in the Tourist Club of Minneapolis, of which she has been secretary and chairman of various committees and a prominent member of the Thursday Musical. After her graduation, she spent time traveling in the British Isles and on the continent with her mother. For several years, Edith Robbins taught in the various grades of the public schools of Robbinsdale. It was here those incomparable little verses for children, now recognized from coast to coast, began as nature studies and memory gems for her pupils. Verses for which the critics from Boston to California acclaim her the foremost writer of children's verses in America today. For the little boy's point of view, Edith declares herself indebted to her beloved nephew, Louis Robbins Gillette, son of her sister Adelaide, Mrs. Ralph P. Gillette, and later for her little girl's thoughts to her small daughter, Helen Mary Robbins. Her teaching field soon broadened and she became principal of Medelia High School, from which she returned to take a position in the East Minneapolis High School, from which she was transferred to Central High School, holding positions in these schools until her marriage in 1907. This teaching experience, together with a practical business career, have preeminently fitted her for the position of school director, where she has served as a clerk of Independent School District 24 in Robbinsdale for a three-year term, having been re-elected July 21, 1923, for another 3 years by the largest vote ever polled in Robbinsdale for a school director. One of Edith Robbins' most notable achievements was the extraordinary work she did during the war, when under her personal supervision, several thousand garments were made from dozens of bolts of new materials donated for the purpose, for which Edith Robbins either cut or directed the cutting and making. Her workrooms included T.B. Walker offices, number 807 Hennepin Avenue, on heatless Mondays, the Charles Pillsbury residence, and other places where she kept scores of sewing machines supplied with material and volunteer workers. All these garments were sent parcel post direct to the scenes of need in France and Belgium. Letters are still coming from children whose way was made less hard by these timely gifts. In 1920, Ginn and Company of Boston, publishers of school books, with the assistance of Thaddeus Giddings, director of the Department of Public School Music in Minneapolis, discovered Edith Robbins through some of her published verses and secured her cooperation as contributor and advisor on the publication of a series of school music readers, of which 4 volumes are already in use in Minneapolis and other cities. Pursuant to this work, Edith Robbins and her little daughter, Helen Mary, spent last summer in Boston writing and conferring on the publication. Several hundred songs with words by Edith Robbins appear in the series. Edith Robbins and her sister, Amy Robbins Ware, own and operate the Robbinsdale Highway Tea House. In addition to their regular real estate insurance and loan business as the Andrew B. Robbins Estate and the Robbinsdale Insurance and Loan Company at number 4223 Crystal Lake Avenue. Over this shining pavement known as the Jefferson Highway, more than 10,000 cars have passed in a single day, a pavement which Ms. Robbins declares must be underlaid with a firm foundation of the rubbers her children left stuck in the mud of the oft-times impassable Crystal Lake Road of their school days. So many interests and activities fill the days to overflowing with new civic and personal problems. Yet, in the midst of the busiest day, Edith Robbins, with the delighted cooperation of her little daughter, Helen Mary, still finds time to set down those sympathetic, humorous, and inspirational little gems for child thought, which will bring joy to generations of children in future years. And there you have it. A little more detail, some repetition, but we're filling in these blanks. In the next episode, we'll follow Edith and her family through the Depression years and into World War II.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one. City every Saturday to see our friends. In the bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.